everyone. Thank you for coming for the next to the last session. Don't be afraid. He really doesn't bite. If you guys would like to come up a little closer, it's okay. And if he does, he'll bite me first because I'm a little closer.
I figured I would change it up this year.
So today we are here to welcome Ray, because he's going to talk to us about validating encryption, and he's going to give us lots of interesting information, but usually just the little puns that go in there, those are the best parts of it. So stay awake and you'll pick up some things here and there. So Ray is the CEO and founder of SafeLogic, even though he's not dressed like a CEO. You're supposed to have a hoodie to be a CEO.
It's funny, it's right in my back.
Oh, then you're credible as a CEO.
Said hoodie.
Ah, okay, great. He hails from Mississippi, so even though he doesn't have an accent, he is Southern, which is a great thing. He enjoys jousting in period costumes, preferably. He has not been stabbed yet, although one came very close to an ear, and he almost had a pierced ear. He also enjoys gardening. He likes planting daffodils. They're very beautiful. And he has an amazing collection of merces. That's male purses, for those of you who don't quite know what that might be. And I've heard that he is a very good painter and that he does watercolor pictures of small kittens. Wow. Welcome.
So, first of all, my merce collection is inherited from Doug, who passes down all of his old merces to me when he buys new ones in bulk. that was awesome. Okay, so last session of the day. This will be fun. All right, so today what we are going to talk about, and thank you for the lovely intro, by the way, is validating encryption and whether or not it is a bottleneck for security innovation. So, jumping ahead, who thinks it is a bottleneck? Who doesn't think it's a bottleneck? Good. All right, so we can go to the bar. talk done. So I want to start with just kind of a few, just talk about some of the challenges that we see in terms of delivering crypto modules to our customers, right? So what SafeLogic does is we provide crypto modules with an emphasis on compliance and specifically FIPS 140, but we've kind of tailored some things around, you know, HIPAA and some of the data protection requirements there. So we deal a lot with compliance, right? And one of the things that we always talk about and evangelize is third-party validation, and you'll see why we do that shortly. But I want to kind of go through just kind of a general why we're here, some of the challenges that we see with FIPS validations, both, you know, I guess in terms of our own validation strategy as well as, what we've seen in the past from some of our consulting efforts. And then we'll talk about some of the value in FIPS 140. I've got, out of 12 slides, I think I've got one slide on that. And then we're going to go through and talk about why there are some gating factors here and why it's hard to kind of time validation with some of the more innovative product schedules and delivery schedules that we see today. All right, so the age-old question, why are we here? Who does FIPS 140 for fun, other than Mark Minnick? Yeah, nobody, right? We're all here to either sell product or to buy product, right? And that's a key point, and I think there's a lot of value there that we'll talk about in a second. There's certainly the, from the end user side, you've got the trusted, third-party validation that allows you to claim compliance to your systems level policies and all that good stuff. From a vendor side, we'll talk about some of the values there, but those are frankly the reasons that we're here, right? It's not a fun standard, it's not an easy standard, it's not a flexible standard, at least not for the product vendors, it's not. So it is fraught with challenges, right? the downsides, I mean, we've talked about all this stuff for years, and it applies to end users as much as it applies to product developers and vendors. Main downside, it takes too long. This stuff takes a very, very long time, 12, 14, 18 months, and sometimes a little bit faster depending, but generally it takes a while. It costs a whole lot of money, right? You've got labs to pay for, you've got potentially consultants to pay for, you've got just all these different cost factors that add up. And whether you're a small business or a large business, it definitely impacts the P&L there. Engineering time, this is the huge one, right? If it was easy, I think we'd probably all do it more often and more frequently, and there would probably be more certificates. The fact of the matter is, even though the standard's been around for a while and we all know what we're doing with it, the stuff still takes a lot of engineering time, right? It just does. There's self-tests to be added and new self-tests to be added and just different tweaks and requirements and CAVP tests to account for and things like that just take a significant amount of engineering time. And usually when folks are doing this on their own, right, and they're trying to go about it themselves or what have you, it as you all know, the standard seems pretty black and white. It seems like it makes sense. And then you get into the lab and you find out, oh, that's what they meant. And then you found out about this thing called implementation guidance that just throws a wrench into everything. So, you take all these factors and it does take a significant amount of engineering resource time, which presents an opportunity cost, right? Those, the time and the cycles that those engineers are developing towards FIPS, they could be working on, other things, right? And it's those other things that presents that opportunity cost. What's the newest feature you can add? What's the gap that you can fill to keep you competitive? So, so those are kind of some of the major downside. So on the subject of taking too long, I figured I would throw out my top 10 schedule dependencies, or I'm sorry, my top three. I whittled it down. So my top three schedule dependencies that I've seen, your mileage may vary, but just from what I see, what drags this process out so long? One of them is having to make code changes, right? So very rarely does a product vendor go into testing on their own and not have to make a single source code change, right? Sometimes it happens, but there are changes to be made. Hopefully not that many. And those changes vary, right? There could be software changes, and God forbid there can be hardware changes, which can take even longer and draw the process out even further. Lots of examples about that, but we'll talk about that later. Vendor commitment, right? We've seen this a lot, more when we were doing some of our consulting, but because this process takes so long and because there's such opportunity cost and investment resources and things like that, there's a pretty significant commitment on the side of the vendor. And what tends to happen is projects can lose steam, right? So, as you've got the sales teams, harping on the product team to get FIPS validated, everyone's energized, everyone's going, you get in process, everything's fine and good. And then you've got changes to implement, or you've got other features to build, or you've got, priority level one support issues from your integrator or what have you, right? Sometimes things take precedence, and we've seen sometimes projects lose steam because that commitment tends to wane over time. And then finally, timing these things is awfully difficult, and it's not just the timing of the whole process, right? It's not just the timing of doing the documentation and doing the testing and waiting for the validation. It's timing your effort with basically timing the validation effort with your development lifecycle, right? And your development timelines. Adding that Scrum story to it and just following it through, right? It's not always an easy thing. And so one of the things that we see quite often is this struggle of when do I start, right? Because I've got this release and I don't know if I can make it in, and that release is only going to be supported for so long, but I can target the next one, but then I'm going to miss the market. And sometimes we see people just getting this paralysis of not being able to do anything because it's hard to time, right? And especially when you're dealing with mobile, right? Because mobile changes so fast, there's such a rapid development and rapid deployment that it's hard to target something that's 12 months away, right? And it's going to change 2 months after you start, and then another 2 months after that, and then you're going to finish testing, and you're going to wait for NIST, and then it's going to change again. And so that timing is very, very, very difficult. Getting the development timelines, a lot of people don't think about this, but like just from a mobile perspective, trying to deal with changes in, Xcode, for example, right? So any mobile development companies here want to do stuff for mobile? Okay. It's a pain in the ass, right? So what happens is, with new versions of iOS, Apple will go through and change versions of Xcode, which is their development environment, right? Some of the challenges that we see there in terms of timing are, new version of Xcode comes out, something happens with the compilation, and the integrity test fails, right? So now you can't even load a module in FIPS mode because it just flat out won't load, right? So getting some of those things, synced with your development timelines is frankly just challenging. And I think that's a huge reason why we see a lot of bottlenecks, especially on the mobile side, because it's hard to start a FIPS 140 mobile project from scratch, right? It's just very difficult to do. So overall challenges of a validation, excuse me, defining the module. So this one isn't really relevant to us now, but we do help some folks with, once they've integrated our module, sometimes we'll help them gap up to a level 2 or something like that. And sometimes actually defining what the module is, the thing that they're validating, isn't always easy, right? Because they might be, let's say, we were having this conversation recently where we were going into an appliance that has an optional HSM. Okay, so do you include the HSM? Do you not include the HSM? Which appliance models do we include? And we've got new models coming, and actually defining that module is sometimes pretty difficult. The operating system and the platform support is a huge issue, again, especially for mobile, right? Because you've got, if we think about Android, we've got a couple of customers that even run different variants of Android within their own organization, right? So it's like getting them to align everything with what's going on their different Android forks and stuff like that is difficult. And then also getting them to say, okay, well, which version are we going to validate and test on, right? And which version are we going to plug you into? It's a decision process, right? And it's not an easy one. Using approved algorithms. This is a challenge because I'll get to another point in a second. This is a challenge because vendors are concerned about backwards compatibility, right? So, Valerie was talking about supporting products for 10 years, right? So you might be connecting to a system that is, that's the 6-7 year old legacy system where, from a FIPS 140 perspective, maybe those algorithms have deprecated, but you still got to talk to each other, right? So that's a challenge that a lot of folks have to deal with is how do you deal with backwards compatibility? And then how do you make sure that from a FIPS perspective, you're, operational and compliant, but, you're not putting your customer's mission at risk. Algorithm testing, I think, is also an issue sometimes. And not just from the perspective that, the CMVP talks about where people get it wrong. It's more just getting it right, getting the timing down in terms of when you do the testing and making sure that you've got it accurately and that you're running it on all the proper platforms and environments and things like that, keeping up with the changes. So that's definitely a challenge that most people don't think about. And when we talk to people about, testing AES, they'll say, oh yeah, well, we use AES, so we're good. It's like, okay, you're using AES, okay, maybe, but you actually have to go through and test it. Oh, that's easy. Really? Okay, have you been through CAVP? Do you have all the harnesses? Do you have all the vectors and processing and stuff like that? Which, to a lot of us here, it's pretty rote, pretty standard, but to someone not in the know, you just don't know what you don't know. Programmatic challenges that kind of stifle the innovation in some of this stuff. IGs, right? That's
constant themes.
Next one. All right, next. We all know the issue. Changing this. IGs are challenging. And we all know why. If you're not familiar why, sometimes there are tweaks to the standard or changes to the standard or new requirements that aren't actually new requirements, they're just enhancements to old requirements that we weren't really thinking about, but it's not a new requirement, but you're forced to do it. That's what we have to deal with sometimes. Anybody ever been into that situation? 800-90 health test, anyone? I swear, we were one week away from validation, and all of a sudden we have to get that. Anyway. But it wasn't a new requirement, because you wouldn't do that. Vendor input to the standard. I think this is a challenge now and will be going forward, right? As you know, the standard was written for smart cards and tokens, right? And it was written a long time ago. Being able to provide good solid input to the standard and driving the standard and getting it matured with how technology is moving just doesn't. It hasn't been successful. It's a very challenging. We've got the CMUF, which admittedly I don't follow very often because you know my time's limited. But I think they're trying to offer up some suggestions. But you know we've all done working groups with NIST and NIAP, and it's just hard. It's frustrating and it's challenging. And the input isn't always absorbed. And if it is, it's not absorbed as quickly as we need it from a vendor's perspective, right? And especially as we start to look at mobile and IoT and all these really dynamic and really fast-moving technologies, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. The latency and review cycles. So how many people have told your customers that you're almost validated, you're just waiting on CMBP, right? Yeah. How much longer? I don't know. Right, it should be soon. We have no control over it, right? It's all kind of canned answers. But again, huge issue that delays your certificate, it ties people up, it holds orders, it throws a bottleneck into what you know vendors are trying to do and trying to build and trying to release and trying to sell. So I'd love to see something improved there. But anyway, enough of the bitching. So the value to end users, I do believe that FIPS 140 does provide a good amount of value to end users, right? One of them is rigorous testing. So as an end user, you can kind of bet on the fact that through third-party validation, a particular vendor has gone through some additional testing that maybe they wouldn't have as part of their development process, right? And that's huge. Interoperability is a big one. So I dealt with this one at Cisco quite a bit where, we had an instance where we were trying to connect to a box of a different manufacturer, trying to do like an SSH connection, and it wasn't working because essentially the algorithms weren't implemented properly on the other box. Of course, it wasn't Cisco's fault. Nothing ever is. But actually, it was that case where they weren't processing something correctly, and so we couldn't get the session set up. So one of the nice things about FIPS 140 is if you're using the same set of algorithms and protocols and standards, there's a better chance of interoperability with multi-vendor platforms. Third-party validation, we preach this one a lot, and I do believe there is value in having an independent third party stand up and say, yes, you've met the standard, or yes, you've done what you've said you've done, right? Because over time there have been a lot of folks who have stood up and said, I'm FIPS 140 compatible or capable or designed for FIPS and stuff like that, right? Which doesn't mean anything, right? It means nothing. So, when we talk to end users and enterprises and stuff like this about encryption and FIPS, we always talk about third-party validation, right? Not just about FIPS 140, but saying that there is a independent lab that's gone through and verified all this stuff, so that when someone has a certificate, it's not just a self-certification, right? And then. The point I just added, like 10 minutes before the talk, was vendor dedication, right? So if you, I think as a vendor, if you go through the FIPS 140 process, I mean, like you said, it's not always easy, right? So if you go through and make the commitment and sign up and wait the 12 to whatever months, you're committed to the process, right? And so you're committed to selling to the DoD, or you're committed to what have you, which I think speaks a good volume. On the product vendor side, I think the first is standard algorithms, right? We were at some healthcare show in May, We're at a healthcare show in May. I'm talking to a bunch of different vendors about, you know, security and encryption and things like that. And first of all, it was really disappointing in terms of the security stories that we were hearing from these folks, right? Everything from like, you just wouldn't believe it. But anyway, one of the best ones was we were talking to this one particular company, and we were talking about just, you know, encryption and really high level FIPS 140 and stuff like that. And the guy said, "Oh, we don't need AES or whatever. We've got Palo." Like, what? Yeah, and it turns out they had this guy Palo that was writing all their encryption stuff from scratch, but he's really effing smart. So we're gonna do what Palo does. And Doug goes, "What happens if Palo gets hit by a bus?" And their CEO goes, "I don't know." They had no clue, right? And then, you know, second of all, we didn't really berate him on it, but like, Palo probably is a smart guy, but does he really know encryption? Is it really better than, you know, all the cryptanalysis that everything that's been done on AES and whatnot? So it was kind of frustrating, right? But so one of the things that when we talk to, you know, the newbies like that, we try to teach them that, you know, one of the values to FIPS is, you know, having a good set of standardized algorithms that have been looked at by a lot of sources. And then also making sure those algorithms are implemented properly. Like I said with that Cisco example, right? The other box had, I think it was, I can't remember if it was their Diffie-Hellman implementation or their, I can't remember what it was, but something was flawed, right? And so one of the values that I do like, it's a pain in the butt sometimes, but is the algorithm testing, right? You can make sure that you've implemented AES per the spec and it's functioning as it should. Documenting the process, documenting the code, documenting the product. More documentation is good, I think, and especially for certain startups that we've talked to and worked with. Documentation isn't always the forefront of engineering or product management or whatever, right? It's get product out the door, get the, you know, get your MVP out, get the beta out, what have you. We'll document it later, right? We'll document it later. And sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. And while FIPS 140 isn't the end-all, be-all of security documentation, it's at least something, right? And it gives you some process to follow. But then finally, again, the big reason, compliance, right? All these things are all fine and good, but they're all done for one reason, to sell product. So in terms of future direction and some things that are really going to screw us when it comes to innovation, I'm kind of just thinking about the quantum computing stuff. I mean, it's still really new and really, you know, but it is a good time to start thinking about it. From a FIPS 140 perspective, it's going to be a long time before that standard even considers quantum computing, in my opinion. It might do it through some bullshit implementation guidance, but who knows? Some of the things that's also going to strangle us moving forward is, just as a technology community, as a market, as a whatever you want to call it, everything's going to be going to mobile first, mobile only, IoT, things like that, right? So, you know, yes, there will be the standard, you know, server and mainframe and, you know, stuff like that deployments, but most of what we're going to see is going to be in that really fast-moving area, and you know, I don't know if the standard's going to keep up, and I think it's going to be really challenging to try to balance validation with innovation as we start to look at mobile and IoT and stuff like that. So in terms of addressing the requirements, so one of the things that we'll usually tell people from the government side is look for a validation certificate, right? Don't just take someone's word for it that they're FIPS compliant, compatible, certified, whatever, right? So we'll say, you know, here's how you actually validate that. Here's how you validate their claims. It's pretty easy, right? So yeah, that we spent a good time on that. Also from you know, a government / end user perspective, we talked to folks about considering their data flows, right? Because one question will be, where do I need FIPS within my system, right? And the answer is it just depends, right? Let's look at your overall data flows, right? Where you have data at rest that you need encrypted? Do you have data in transit that you need encrypted? You know, where, how, why, and all this stuff. Are you sending data down to multiple clients, mobile, et cetera? So it's a matter of kind of figuring out your data flows and where not only strong encryption, but third-party validation makes sense. And then finally, looking for recent certification activity, right? We see a lot of very old, very stale certificates that folks still push. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, from there was a vendor that was out there that had a, you know, was touting mobile validation, and it was on like, what was the, it was before, it was pre-iOS 5. How was it? Anyway, the point is they had a certificate from like 7 years ago and just have been writing it ever since. And, you know, who knows how much the product's changed? Are they technically, you know, in compliance? You know, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, in terms of just an end user side, we always try to educate folks to look for a recent certification activity. For product vendors, first of all, don't roll your own crypto. Don't be Palo and try to write your own encryption algorithm. I mean, probably know what you're doing, but just not a good idea. Using validated crypto just makes sense, I think, because it's been through everything that we've already talked about. And then just maintaining your certificate, right? So, yeah, I know there's the talk now about removing certificates that are 5 years old or whatever. That's not the only reason. I mean, it makes good sense to maintain your certificate over version changes, product changes, enhancements, things like that. So, in terms of what's at stake, you know, with this, what I feel is kind of stifling of innovation, but something that we still need in terms of FIPS, missing the market, right? So, if someone's not doing it properly, if they're, you know, kind of taking this old path of, you know, the 12 to 14 month validation process with their own stuff, I mean, they could very well miss the market, right? Worse, they could actually not do anything in terms of encryption and leave data unprotected, which is its own point because security is very much a layered approach, and just because you've encrypted data doesn't mean you're absolutely safe from any sort of breach. But it is something, right? And it's something that absolutely needs to be done. I guess the final one here for the product vendors is you don't always want to be second. Sometimes you do, but it's just tied to missing the market, right? If you're stuck in a 12 to 14 month validation window while your competitors out there selling product, you're not only going to miss the market, but you're going to be second, and who knows, maybe just not even be part of federal. So, anyway, that's about where we are. 2:45. Contact information. I know I flew through some things, but I've had about 7 cups of coffee, so. Any questions, comments, praises? Do you want to refute any statements in my bio, which was very, very creative and very true?
I did research on that.
Right. It was on the internet, so it has to be true. Validation happens
For the crypto module, the actual cryptographic algorithms. How much validation that it was actually implemented correctly do we believe the labs do?
I believe they do a lot with what they're given. Okay, but there's a lot. So I've got an interesting story. So it was when I was at Cisco. We had a lab come on site to do some on-site testing for us. And one of the developers said something that he should not have said, but it was so true. The particular tester was giving him a hard time about something. And he goes, "How do you even know that the code I'm showing you is going into the product?" And the tester was like, "Oh shit, is it?" He's like, "Yes, of course it is. But how do you know that, right?" So I would argue that yes, I think there's a fair bit of validation in terms of the sandbox that is the module, but outside of that, I mean, there's so many other factors that no, it's not the end all and be all of a validation, but.
We get it back,
or did I run it on the last one that went through?
I have a PC sitting over there that's got properly implemented.
That I know that works. Yep.
And I know that works, but I can't get it to work on my device. But I give you back the file, and it matches 100% every time.
Exactly.
Right. No, that's exactly right.
Roger, Roger.
Yeah, can you give me some lemon?
Yeah.
Christ. I am. I'm kind of flattered. He must want something. He wants budget for something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cool. Anything else?